We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we are definitely out here. Twitter, yeah. Facebook, Instagram, yes. House Party, YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet. We all over OnlyFans. Y'all missing out. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the TikTok and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on Rep. Akasha Lauren Spence is seeking an appointment to the Oregon State Senate, and the Senate passes a bill to counter hate crimes against Asian Americans.
New Louisville exhibit celebrates the life of Breonna Taylor, and a Portland opera performance focuses on the Black experience.
But first, let's jump into Derek Chauvin found guilty of all charges in the death of George Floyd. Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer whose fateful encounter on May 25, 2020 with George Floyd, which resulted in his death, was convicted on all counts of murder and manslaughter Tuesday, April 20th, after a two-week trial and a year of intense demonstrations that placed focus on race, policing, and a nation pushed to the edge. The jury in Hennepin County Government Center took roughly 10 hours to return a verdict after prosecutors and defense attorneys finished their closing statements on Monday. Chauvin, 45, was silent in court when the verdict was read by Judge Peter Cahill. He was immediately handcuffed, led out of the courtroom by a bailiff, and remanded to the custody of the state of Minnesota. Bail was revoked. Chauvin faces as many as 40 years in prison when sentencing is pronounced. He opted Monday to have Cahill sentence him in the case of conviction on aggravated charges rather than allowing a jury to decide. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for 8 weeks from Tuesday. It's unclear if Chauvin's lawyer, Eric Nelson, will appeal. Floyd's death was one of several at the hands of police that triggered worldwide demonstrations that typically saw thousands in the streets, angered at what many regarded as the wholesale killing of Blacks by an out-of-control police culture, or by racist vigilantism. A sentencing date has been set for Chauvin at 1:30 p.m. Central Standard Time on Wednesday, June 16th, after his murder conviction and the death of George Floyd. Former President and First Lady Barack and Michelle Obama released a statement praising the Minneapolis jury for doing the right thing. True justice requires that we come to terms with the fact that Black Americans are treated differently every day, said the Obamas. It requires us to recognize that millions of our friends, family, and fellow citizens live in fear that their next encounter with law enforcement could be their last. And it requires us to do the sometimes thankless, often difficult, but always necessary work of making the America we know more like the America we believe in.
Acts. Yo, yes, sir. I'm going to just jump straight to it. Chauvin's eyes, when they were reading the verdict, boy, that thing was all over the place.
Look.
Like, what? What's
that? That was that one white guy gif that we all know where he blink and like shake his head like, what? Huh? It was that. It was that.
He's the new gif.
Yes.
Give him up real quick.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, that was a moment. And the only thing that I can compare that to, of course, I was, you know, really young, but leading up to like the OJ verdict, how people were at the TV. I know I was at work, had the courtroom on one screen. I'm working in a document with my coworkers. We're all kind of listening in, and that moment hit like, oh. Okay. And there was an amount of relief, and my relief came from something different. It wasn't the relief like, yes, the system works.
Because you know better.
Yeah, like, no, my relief came from my people, and when I say my people, not just people I know personally, but people on this same wavelength as far as the cause and the push, right? And the fact that they wouldn't be put in harm's way that same day if that verdict would have went a different way.
Ooh.
That's where my relief came from. And of course, you know, shout out to the people out there that have been keeping that momentum going for this past year. You know, the family, I know there's, you know, whatever they're feeling in this moment in this time. seeing his daughter. There's a lot of elements to this that, you know, definitely feel great about, but it's not the, we have arrived.
Right.
And that's what I don't want people to get confused.
Yeah, seriously. I do have some concerns about Cahill being solely responsible for the sentencing. Mm-hmm. I remember during the final days of the trial, he was upset with some of the statements being made by politicians. I believe it was Auntie Maxine Sandwich said, and he was criticizing how he didn't want, you know, outside influences to have any influence on the jury. And but at the same time, it was just like, I think he said something almost to the effect like it could cause a mistrial. And it was like, all right, this is an issue that everyone is talking about, you know,
right?
Politicians, TV show hosts, average person on the street, like, chill out, bro. Like, just chill all the way out. And so for him to be solely responsible for the sentencing, it's kind of sticky there. It's kind of,
yeah.
I am concerned.
One of the things I want to throw out there, I'm going to, you know, give a shameless plug here at the top of it. We've talked about that House Bill 2002. We got Advocacy Day coming up on Friday the 30th. And, you know, for the listeners who aren't aware of House Bill 2002, you know, some of the key points, this bill would reduce unnecessary contact with law enforcement for low level offenses by limiting stops and arrests, like the ones that led to the deaths of Sandra Bland and Dante Wright. It would abolish supervision fees and incentivize people to earn time off their supervision. So that's parole and probation. Invest in culturally specific services, victim services, and restorative justice. And it would advance equity by requiring race and gender data collection to ensure that the funds are reaching impacted communities. So this is a thing. And, you know, there's a couple of things that people can do to kind of help this get pushed through. And one of them is contacting your legislators. And you can do that at safetyandjustice.org/takeaction. And it's a preform letter. You just put in your addy name. You can choose to add on to the letter that's going to be distributed to who represents your area. Mm-hmm. Or if you guys want to rally up and be a part of this advocacy day, it's virtual, so you don't have to drive anywhere. You can go to safetyandjustice.org/advocacyday2021 and register. Okay. So this, I think, I fully believe, you know, that part in there about limiting these arrests and even what people can be stopped for in the first place.
Yeah. The interactions will change when there's less of them, period. So real quick, I want to make sure the people are clear on this. So the letter is already written. Mm-hmm. Basically need to go to the site. If they wanted to add something additional to the letter, that's pretty much all they need to do.
Yeah.
And click send and it's go time. What's the site again?
It is safetyandjustice.org and you can /take action. That's going to send that.
Boom. All right, man. Y'all heard it here first, second and third. So we're going to check in. We're going to check in on y'all all week. We're going to keep posting this all week long on the social medias. You know what I'm saying? Get involved, y'all. I mean, I can't. This is the easiest way. The letter is pre-written for you. Just, you know, it's like signing the petition. It's exactly like signing the petition.
It's that.
Right. And y'all do that all the time to get the national anthem changed and everything. Everyone else, y'all want, y'all want done. So this is essentially signing the petition. Go to the website. Click the little button you need to get to, pull the letter up, boom, boom, boom. Again, if you want to add something additional to it, you definitely can. Hit send and you're done. You've made an impact.
Yes.
So let's get it done. And they have until when to do this? Friday?
Yeah. So the push Advocacy Day is Friday. So to register for that, we would need you all to have that done by Tuesday at 5 p.m.
Okay.
All right. But as far as the take action and getting that letter over to your legislator, just keep doing it. You got time.
All right. Cool. Say less. We on it. New Louisville exhibit celebrates the life of Breonna Taylor. In the years since Breonna Taylor was killed by Louisville, Kentucky police, global protests rose calling for justice for her death. But the city's Speed Art Museum guest curator, Allison Glenn, decided that there could be a way to make meaning and even beauty from the sadness of the killing of Breonna Taylor. Glenn has curated an exhibition that celebrates the life of the 26-year-old EMT worker and even had conversations with her mother, Tamika Palmer, to help her make certain the exhibition was a respectful and worthy commemoration of her daughter's life. The show is called Promise, Witness, Remembrance. The free and open to the public exhibition is being shown at the Louisville Speed Art Museum. It premiered April 7th and features artists from Louisville and across the United States. Glenn developed the exhibit with the guidance of Taylor's family and others, including a steering committee of Louisville artists, activists, mental health professionals, researchers, and community members, and a national advisory panel selected by Glenn. Glenn told the Times that it was important that this show be something that was representative of Breonna and the people of her community as well. A lot of people feel that museums aren't accessible and aren't reflective of who they are. This exhibition is about a woman who lived in Louisville, whose family lived in Louisville. It's about what happened to her and in response to these things. There will be people who may come to the museum for the first time. Promise, Witness, Remembrance is open through June 6th.
Hey, this is awesome.
Seriously.
And even for Allison, Glenn, to take time to reach out to Mama, that's huge. You know, I think that adds a layer of authenticity to it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and making sure that it's done in a way that would commemorate Breonna the right way.
Right.
I'm really a fan of this, and I got to do. I wish they'd hurry up and get teleportation.
I mean,
ready, Elon. What you got going, man? I mean,
here's the thing: everybody got stimmies. We can afford the ticket. What you charging for that? Is it like 200 round trip for the teleport?
Right.
That. Maybe they'll have like a virtual representation of this that we can check out.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But you're right. Getting the family's consent and consideration and putting together the exhibit is essential. And I'm glad she did take that extra step to do it.
Yeah.
Man.
And another shameless plug in terms of museums that people find to not be really culturally representative and accessible. The Portland Art Museum is doing its thing.
Again.
And for the people that may or may, or the people that may not know, that is where we do a lot of our work. That is where we do what they call headquarter meeting.
Is that home base?
That's what it sounds like to me. This summer, be prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all around that thing.
Absolutely. Ooh.
Well, Representative Akasha Lawrence Spence seeks an appointment to the Oregon State Senate.
Hey.
Former state rep Akasha Lawrence Spence, Democrat from Portland, will seek an appointment to the Oregon Senate being vacated this fall by Senator Jenny Burdick, Democrat from Portland. Burdick confirmed to Willamette Weekly over the weekend that she'll step down from the Senate District 18 seat after this year's legislative sessions conclude. By Wednesday's print edition, Lawrence Spence's name had surfaced as a likely contender to serve the remainder of Burdick's term, which runs through 2025. Lawrence Spence, 32, runs a Portland real estate development company that helps small business owners purchase their properties. She served nearly all of 2020 in the Oregon House after being appointed to a seat vacated by Representative Jennifer Williamson, Democrat from Portland, in a brief bid for Secretary of State. If appointed to this seat, she would become the fourth Black lawmaker currently serving in the Oregon Senate. Lawrence Spence says her year in Oregon House showed her how much inequity remains in the state. Until we have embedded in our processes the equity that is needed to move all Oregonians forward, she says, we will continue to see families negotiate between paying the rent and buying groceries. The seat will be appointed this fall by the Multnomah and Clackamas County Commissions. Lauren Spence already has the backing of Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. In confirming her intentions to seek the Senate appointment, Lauren Spence recalled the biblical story of Jonah, who ran from God's calling only to be swallowed by a whale. Lauren Spence says she, too, had fled her early political work in Brooklyn, New York. Despite all that running, I still ended up in the belly of that whale, she says. The work is not done yet. I believe that I've been called to do this work.
Hey.
Yes, Lord. That yes, Lord hits different, especially with that quote.
Of course. Of course. That quote definitely does. Had the opportunity to meet State Rep during an interview with DJ Passports on his show, The Passport.
Oh.
Amazing interview. Amazing.
Yeah.
That is also available online. If you look up the podcast, The Passport, make sure you put some links on the website for that. But yeah, amazing. I'm the energy she brings, just the conversations and the enlightenment. Like, there were things that she was telling me just as far as the process that I was like, oh, I was completely unaware. Okay, there are so many different ways for us to get involved and really, you know, have a seat at the table. Thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. This is dope.
Something you just touched on, I think, you know, goes back to the importance of communicating, right? And getting the information on out to the people on at a ground level, right? Because it's easy when you're a part of a field. Everybody communicates and understands the lingo, the language. So
right.
Your shorthand conversations make complete sense to one of your colleagues.
Right.
But to your average Joe or Jane, not so much.
Right.
And so having more of these conversations and putting information in front of people in, you know, some simpler terms are beneficial.
Yeah.
Like, very. And I'm on this wave lately. The more that I'm paying attention on socials specifically of, you know, people often take things they read and kind of regurgitate that same without tweaking it at all and mm-hmm. not really knowing what they're saying. Just because the words sounded good and doing it, you know, with the intent to be helpful, but sure. not exactly being helpful.
Yeah.
So just want to put that out there. Information yes. is great, people.
Shout out to Akasha. Thank you so
shout
much.
Out.
A new Portland Opera performance focuses on the Black experience. Hello. Portland Opera's Journey to Justice features a variety of compositions focused on the Black experience. Damian Jeter is an artistic advisor to Portland Opera and the curator of the program. He selected pieces that connect the civil rights movement of the 1960s to current events that explore both joy and pain specific to Black Americans. The opera also asked Jeter to include his own composition, The Talk, Instructions for Black Children When They Interact with Police.
Jeez.
Right? Attempting to encompass a generations-long struggle in an 86-minute concert that cannot be performed for an audience in person is nothing if not ambitious. More than almost any other form of performance art, opera relies on the physical presence of human beings, on the reverberation of breaths and voices in vast spaces. The show is streaming now through May 31st through portlandopera.org. Opportunities to view and listen to this form of art allows people to further become educated on the Black history in America. That moment is transfixing, not only because of what it is, but because of what it is a part of. Journeys to Justice stands alongside Scott Joplin's Tremonitia, Anthony Davis's X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X, and many other operas by Black composers that have affirmed that opera can and should belong to everyone. That is why together, the notes of the concert create something more than music. They create a new chapter in an ongoing musical revolution.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a great point. I like how that was broken down about where the challenge of doing opera virtually.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think about that, of how, you know, rooms are set up, how the acoustics are set up in a place so that when these people are hitting these notes,
mm-hmm.
that it is moving around, because that is a feeling. You are feeling that voice through your bones.
Absolutely. Yeah. We also, I had the opportunity of interviewing Damien pre-COVID. They were getting
somebody
ready.
Somebody out here.
I mean, you know, I'll be interviewing and stuff like that. They'll be out here. But back in the old X-ray studios pre-COVID, Damien Jeter came down. I forgot the woman he was with, but they were discussing his piece, his yeah, this piece he was working on. I believe it is this exact same one, the talk. So this was the interview to do some promo for the show, you know, get it out there. And then COVID happened. It was like, so I'm glad, you know, there's an opportunity right here with the Portland Opera to get this thing up and running and get it out there. Definitely want to check that out. And yeah, maybe we'll get that interview edited and get that up anyway.
You know? That'll be a great time.
Yeah, yeah.
Great time.
All right. Say less. Yeah, yeah. And if you want the exclusive, you know what I'm saying, unedited, head to OnlyFans. And when you get to OnlyFans, hit that other tab, OnlyCans. You know what I'm
saying? Y'all know, Red Cup Chronicles, holla. All right. Well, the Senate passes a bill to counter hate crimes against Asian Americans. The Senate on Thursday approved a bill designed to make it easier for law enforcement to investigate hate crimes against Asian Americans after a surge in violence amid the COVID-19 pandemic. In a rare, if fleeting, moment of bipartisanship on Capitol Hill, senators approved the bill 94-1. Who was that?
Yeah, that one.
We will send a powerful message of solidarity to the AAPI community that the Senate will not be a bystander as anti-Asian violence surges in our country, Senator Mazie Hirono, Democrat from Hawaii, said before the vote, referring to Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. Hirono cited the more than 3,800 anti-Asian hate crimes reported around the country in the last year, according to research by Stop AAPI Hate. Days after Hirono introduced the bill last month, a gunman killed 8 people, including 6 Asian women, in attacks at 3 spas in Georgia. The bill would designate one Justice Department official to expedite review of potential hate crimes against Asian Americans. It would also set up a voluntary database of hate crimes and issue guidance to help local law enforcement make it easier for people to report crimes. And it would help local agencies develop public education campaigns on prevention and reporting of crimes. The bill now goes to the Democratic-controlled House. If approved there without changes, it would go to President Biden for his signature.
You know, I'm glad this is happening. Mm-hmm. But far too often I find myself in this place of wonderment. Like, legislation has to be passed to tell a singular group of people, for the most part, a singular group of people to treat every other group of people and persons like human beings. There needs to be legislation.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like in the home, you're not brought up to believe that people of other colors are human beings and deserve your respect. And reverence and anything else that you would want for yourself. Legislation has to happen. Like,
the response I've had for quite a few years now, when, you know, in conversation, you have people who say, you know, things change. No, laws were created. This wasn't like people woke up like, no, let us stop.
Thank you, Ken.
That's not Thank how that worked out.
People are taking credit saying, like, we just evolved and we became better and our opinions as a nation just got better.
Yeah. No.
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 No. No.
And again, of course, I am, you know, for stopping people being trash to other people.
Right.
All the way. And while we're on the topic, I also want to say, for people out there who don't understand how you can stand for multiple things at the same time, I can be for my culture and also not want things to happen to people of Asian culture.
Yeah. It doesn't take you being for your culture.
Exacto mundo. Hmm. So I just want to put that out there, people. You can be a decent human being in real time.
Yeah, it's a whole PSA. That's it. A whole PSA. You can be a decent human being at the same time. Mm-hmm. You too.
You too.
Mm-hmm.
You listening. You that just looked back at the radio, make sure you're hearing this right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Goodness.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friend to tell a friend. Because we'll be. Here's the thing. Let me just put this out here. And mm-hmm. views expressed does not reflect KNUM 96.7. Wise up, be better people. Because there are consequences, plain and simple.
Ooh.
Mm. That's it. Don't be that. Don't be that person. Don't let it happen to you. Don't be that. Like, nah. So anyway, make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and again at 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign. His punk self.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Special thanks to our researcher and writer, Claudia Claudio.
Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by C's.
Jonathan Mattingly needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death. But this all starts with punk Daniel Cameron. Start with you. With that very little faith. Just get him out of there. Resign, bro. Get out the way. I understand there's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. You got your homies on the Republican. You don't want to. Just resign. Get out the way.
Move it. He definitely looks like it's a lot of pressure to not smell like weed every day. All this for 50.